Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and rumradio.org. It's the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. And if it's unknown, is it really worth knowing? I would like to acknowledge WNAH, Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who have the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audiences in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Alabama. And it's a public service presentation that they do. We also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. I'd gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I believe personally the families are the basic unit of our society, and as the family goes, so does the nation. Harold?
Hello, everyone. Thank you, Joseph, for that nice introduction. The family unit seems to be under attack these days from all sides, and so I am honored to be one of those working to strengthen the glue that holds the family together. And this is my way of giving back. Years ago, I got into recovery and attended AA and worked the 12 steps, and still attend 12-step meetings and work with others. And that succeeds when all else fails, working with others. So if you're new in the rooms of AA or NA or any of the 12-step meetings, just know that part of what happens is we prepare you to work with others by working with you. And we expect nothing in return. It does strengthen our recovery to work with others. So in that way, that is our payment. There's a gift in it for us. But it's hard for some people to get used to the idea that in this day and age, people would do something for nothing, but they do. And it's very heartwarming. It's not only at the holiday season, what the Disney world has chosen to call Fa-la-la days. They've changed the name of it. You know, I think it's genius. But it's not only at the holiday season, but year-round. And that's the way I think a person's spirituality should be. So I give back by working with families and working with people that are new to recovery. Joseph gives back in the same ways. And he is, on top of that, he's created a website, rumradio.org, that's devoted to working with others, how to find someone to work with you if you're new, how to find someone to work with. It says in the big book, go out and find someone and work with them. So this website, rumradio.org, is all about that. Joseph does not earn money at this website. You can readily see that there's nothing for sale here. And as a matter of fact, he has spent money, thousands, starting the website, improving the website, and continuing to improve it so that it is easy to use and easy for people to see the value. So he will give you some numbers. I think we're nearing 190,000 hits to the website. I mean, that in 3 years' time, that is an amazing thing. Many people return again and again. You can go to the website right now and follow along with us as we present tonight's program. From the drop-down boxes, the one called the Captain's Table. And I will let's begin the program as we usually do with a prayer. And then let's give the call-in number. There may be people who would like to ask a question or make a comment. If not, you will be able to listen to the program later in its entirety if you've missed part of it, or other programs. So I really admire the website and the work that it does, and I want to publicly thank Joseph for getting this rolling, and I'm honored to be part of it. Thank you, Joseph.
Thank you, Harold. That's very nice of you to say that. Well, you know, it's very humbling when you hear all those nice remarks, but that's enough about me. Would someone else like to talk about me? I'd like to start the program with the third step prayer and a disclaimer. We are not AA. We say that as a courtesy to AA, that no one person speaks for AA in press, radio, films, and we in the internet. It wasn't back then when it started, but we believe that that's the case. The reason we do that, why no one individual speaks for AA, we have no big shots, no gurus, no poobahs, because if they all of a sudden attain a certain level of notoriety and then they're not able to maintain long-term sobriety, it gives AA a black eye, and people go, well, look, if Joe Blow couldn't do it and he had all this knowledge and all this wisdom and all this time, what's my chance? So we don't go there. What we do is we do it on an individual basis, and the anonymity is about humility. Dr. Bob, one of our co-founders, says there's two ways you can break anonymity. One is in press, radio, and films, and internet, I would say. If they had it, he would have said it. And the other way was that you were so anonymous that the other drunks couldn't find you. So other than that, that's basically, he kept it real simple. Dr. Bob had sponsored 5,000 men. I have that on the website. I have a Back to Basics prologue. It's called 12 and 24. That's 12 steps in 24 hours. Dr. Bob times 5,000. It's a way of getting, and when they worked the steps originally, it was that quick. There was no languishing in the meetings. It was no keep coming back. There was no take your time, find the perfect sponsor. None of that. You got to work immediately. And the recovery rate was astounding compared to the way it is today. We've lost some of our momentum, and Rum Radio is an attempt of trying to recapture the good old days when recovery, in the big book, it tells us, the big book is the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. NA has their own book, which I have never read it, and I understand it's a fine work. A fellow by the name of Jimmy Kay put it together. There was a little division between the drug addict and the alcoholic. The lower echelon of our society decided that one was better than the other, but isn't that always the case, right? You always got to have somebody to look down at. The alcoholic is the prime example of trying to separate himself from ne'er-do-wells, right? So this is Rum Radio. What we try to do is 12 steps. Not particularly AA, although the big book is the template, the basic text. Everything that comes, all the recovery programs have a piece of that in their understanding. And so I believe that's the original template, and I like to use the original template. And I believe anytime you try to copy or change the original template, usually you're not going to get a quite crisp a copy. And then on the other hand, other understandings will be manifested. The big book says on page 164, this book is only meant to be suggestive. We know very little, or we know only a little. More shall be disclosed to both you and to us. And also says, be quick to see where religious people might be right or wrong, or someone else. Those are two statements of humility, and they're found in the basic text. So we're open-mindedness, contempt prior to investigation. Nothing will hold a man in utter ignorance and bar from any argument than the concept of contempt prior to investigation. So we just ask you to keep an open mind. A mind is like a parachute. It works best when it's open. So I like to say the third step prayer. Usually I give this as my first assignment to my sponsees to get a home group. And in the home group, get about 20 or 30 men's names if possible. And every day, call them up and ask them permission to say the third step prayer. It's also called a surrender prayer. And the reason I have them do that is that so they can get used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. It's hard for most of us to do that. It encapsulates what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps. It's going to connect them up with their home group. Like a family, I like to say, we're less than kin and more than kind. They get to know his name and he gets to know their name. And of course, the other thing, and one of the people, one of the fellows he might be calling is thinking about taking his first drink of alcohol, doing his first hit of crack, whatever it might be. And chances are when he hears the third step prayer, he might refrain from that activity. No guarantees here. We have suggestions, which are subtle commands. And rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. To those that cannot or will not give themselves to this simple program. There are such unfortunates. They seem to have been born that way. They're not at fault. There are those who have grave emotional and mental disorders. They too can get well if they have the capacity to be honest. Honestly, well, that's tough for most folks. Getting honest with yourself, getting honest with others. So if this is, it's one step at a time, baby steps. Bill W. said this is a spiritual kindergarten, so welcome to kindergarten. This is the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulty, that the victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen. Amen.
Thank you. How was that? Was that a little faster intro?
Oh, nice. Nice pace. I like that. This gives us the ability to give the phone number and get down to our material tonight. This is a nice article.
Okay, the guest call-in number. Now, we invite your calls. Most of the folks that listen to it on the archive. They do it at their leisure. They click on the website or they click on Blog Talk Radio and they go to the shows. If you'd like to call in and participate with ideas, suggestions, we're open to that. I don't know it all. I can't speak for Harold, but I like to think of myself as a perpetual student. I like that part where it says, and see where someone else might have some ideas. And you know, someone else does. They always do. But you don't know that unless you call in and tell us your ideas. Be heard. Don't worry about it. It's okay. Nobody's perfect. If you make a mistake, hey, you're human. The guest call-in number is 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. All right, so there goes this number. Tonight we're going to be doing a fast break that's more than a give than a take on awakening. It's a section in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, pages 86 and 88 through 88. Everybody's got plans until they get hit. Mike Tyson. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Wow, what's in it for me? My thinking gets lost in thoughts of what's in it for me. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. After all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down, one as far as I could, to where it bent to the undergrowth. I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one left to travel by, and that made all the difference. Robert Frost. I'm thinking about our day may we face indecision. And thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take, which one of those roads. So what do? We ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We're not going to force the issue. It might be something we really want. We feel really motivated. We feel anxious. We don't. We relax and take it easy. We're often surprised how the right answer comes after we try this for a while. It takes a little practice. This is not something that's going to come naturally. These are work with the 12-step Valdonamas is not natural to the common man. You'll hear this: natural man has been an enemy to God and has been so since the fall. And it's all about pride. And pride is the disavowment of God or the need thereof. So what we're doing now, we're trying, this isn't natural. We're counting on God. We're not counting on ourselves to come up with the right answer. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Harold?
This is so important in my recovery. And let me add here a comment about the fact that as I began back in 87 to really get serious about total abstinence, I wasn't sure what I thought of God. My mom had various opinions, and I listened to her, and other people had differing opinions, and so my first sponsor said it was okay for me to just adopt the group itself as my higher power. What I was looking for is a power greater than myself that could solve my problems. And I was quite sure that alcohol was greater than me. That was a power greater than myself. And so, and I had turned my life over to alcohol many, many times. But that wasn't a power that could solve my problems, restore me to sanity. So my sponsor said, well, the group, and it was easy for me to tell that the group itself was a power greater than me. Two heads are always better than one. My best thinking had gotten me into lots of trouble. So I was at that point to... whenever I was in doubt, I would pause and I would check with the group. Before I made any decision, I would check with the group. Make no decision alone was the rule of thumb then. And that worked out great because little by little, the group said, let us love you until you can love yourself. And that was an important part of my progress. So if you're not sure about God and you're not sure you want the 12 steps because you're doubtful about God, relax a bit and realize that any power greater than yourself will work. You just want to get out of yourself at this point because the big book says selfishness and self-centeredness are the root of our problem. Alcohol is but a symptom. So that really serves me well. And little by little, it says, Joseph just read the line, be quick to see where religious people are right. And that, I did my best about that. It only took me 11 years. But I began to see, and it's great that science, anthropology, geology, other technologies have been catching up to and verifying things that the Bible says, and realizing that it's accurate in many places where people have claimed that it's inaccurate. You know, the religious people have said, well, there's money to be made from claiming the Bible is contradictory or is not accurate. It's got contradictions. People that claim that stand to make quite a bit of money from their books. And so, but if we can set that aside, and what I've found is that I needed to listen to someone who had a knowledge of languages and who had a knowledge of the Old Testament and the New, because they mirror each other, I began to understand the Bible. And my sponsor had said prior, contempt prior to investigation is not the smartest thing. And so I said, okay, well, I'll read it. Well, it's quite amazing when you open the Bible with an open mind. But I didn't do that for years and years. It really took me a long time to quickly see where religious people are right. But it's been an amazing journey, and I just want to encourage people who really don't think they have a use for God, don't let that stop you from looking at the 12 steps. It's a plan for living, and just take each paragraph one at a time, apply that to your situation, and see what happens. It's quite amazing, quite amazing. Joseph?
Thanks, Harold. I like to think of it that atheism is a non-profit organization. And organized religion is for profits only.
That's easier to follow with the spelling.
Spelling, yeah, because the first prophet is prophet, a prophet, and then the other one is prophet, profit. So it would be an atheism is a nonprofit. They don't have profits because they don't have any religion. And then organized religion are for making money or profits only. So somehow when you explain a joke, it doesn't really go over as well. But, you know, I'm to the age now where I have to contemplate my own end. And when I'm laying in my casket and people are passing by, you know what I want them to say?
Is that like Bill Cosby's idea? Set up an audio recording?
No, I want them to say he moved. Being still, inexperienced, and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. We're just a rookie. You know, we're still raising Cain, and we're just barely able to maintain. We might pay for the presumption and all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will be, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely on it. Big Book has three planes. It has the plane of inspiration, the plane of service, and the spiritual plane. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we'd be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we'd be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. Our personal shopping list has been put on pause. We can only shop for our neighbor, our sisters, and our brothers-in-law. That's the higher law. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. And you can easily see why. It's a family affair when we're willing to learn to pray with love and care. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. Going to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of a religious body, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also suggested about these. These may be obtained from one's priest or minister or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. You have Day by Day. Day by Day. Oh, remember the song? Day by Day, Day by Day.
Uh-oh. Joseph's internet has been a little extra scratchy tonight, and it sounds like his... Oh,
no,
are
I'm
you back?
He's
oh,
up.
Oh, good.
He's down. He's up.
Your internet seems to be breaking up more than usual. I don't know if there's anything
tonight
we can do about it. So,
oh, you mean
go
my
ahead.
Voice, my voice is breaking up?
Yeah, your voice breaks up more than usual. Usually it does so about once every 5 minutes. Tonight it's once a minute.
Oh, that much, huh? All right, well, maybe we could clear that up. Let's see what we could do. Okay, let me finish this, and then you talk, and I'll see, and I'll call back in on a landline. Day by day, day by day, O dear Lord, three things I pray: to see thee more clearly, to love thee more dearly, follow thee more nearly, day by day, as we go through the day. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We lose control. No, we lose the illusion of control. We constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done. Steady as she goes, no great highs and no great lows. When we were in that much less danger, we are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. Spiritual fuel burns clean. If we have miles to go and never seem to run out of steam, we become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily. If we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It's undisciplined. So we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. Harold?
Yes, that is, I just love these pages and this reading. It's really rich. And I didn't apply it very quickly in my recovery, but... God is very patient. He's waiting there patiently and loves me while I'm yet unlovable. One of the things that Jesus said, you can love those who love you back. Everybody does that. But what we're talking about here is loving the unlovable. be kind, pray for people who use you and hurt you. That's what separates the men from the boys. And I agree, that's what happens in recovery. The world of recovery is that we're expected to do extraordinary things with God's help. And the second step really helped me a lot. Basically says there is a God and I'm not it. So we come to believe. See, part of it is our upbringing. A lot of us had moms and dads who would tell us, you can do anything. You can do anything you put your mind to. Keep a positive mental attitude. You can do anything. You are fantastic. I am the greatest, quote Muhammad Ali. And that takes a person a certain distance, but it doesn't completely bridge the river. It doesn't close the gap. It's only part of the picture. And what AA is about and the other 12-step groups is about being humble, opening your mind, and actually asking for help. Asking for help. Admitting that we are not God. That I could use some help here. And macho men don't want to do that. And I've been to many funerals. Because without God's help, it's just a matter of time. The clock is ticking. We are time bombs when we won't be humble and accept help. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Well, that section, the next section is that sound any better?
Wow, that sounds fantastic. That's a lot better.
Well, maybe we should go to this venue in the future and kind of put away the spit and the blur with Skype. Used to be better. I don't know why. What happened?
They've gotten very, very popular, and they have millions of people using that band. So you have to share with others, and it gets scratchier and scratchier. This sounds terrific. We've really got a winner here now.
Okay, all right. I'll do this in the future then. We're going to do THIQ and the disease concept of alcoholism. Everything that used to be a sin is now a disease. Bill Mayer, William Church Winery, THQ, the biochemical culprit. THQ was discovered in the brains of alcoholics in Houston, Texas, by a scientist named Virginia Davis, who was doing cancer research for her study. She needed fresh human brains and used bodies of homeless winos who had died during the night and were placed by the Houston police in the morning. She discovered in the brains of those chronic alcoholics a substance that's closely related to heroin. The substance, known to scientists, is called tetrahydrosoculine, or THIQ. Dr. Frankenstein, whose brain did you retrieve, Igor? It was Abby Normal's brain.
That's a wonderful movie, and that's one of my favorite parts. Abby Normal.
No, not Abby Normal. Abnormal brain. Jay, Igor, what are you thinking? I have a little thumbnail on the site with Igor looking over his shoulder, and the straw man is coming after him. If I only had a brain. I might be living down in the gutter, but I have more sense than to be shooting up. When the normal adult drinker takes in alcohol, it is very rapidly eliminated at the rate of about one drink per hour. The body.
You missed one little sentence there. The sentence is, when a person shoots heroin into their body, some of it breaks down and turns into THIQ. The alcoholic studied had not been using heroin, so how did THIQ get there?
Ah, okay. Thank you, Harold. Yes, I missed that. Okay, so we have a substance that we can't account for. I might be living down in the gutter, but I have more sense than to be shooting up. In other words, these weren't drug addicts. These were down Skid Row alcoholics. And usually our experience or my experience is that when a guy's down like that, he's not shooting heroin. He has no interest in heroin. You know, heroin's very expensive. You have to be motivated. It takes copious amounts of money to get your heroin. And these guys are buying cheap wine for a couple bucks and getting blasted every day like that. And it's killing them, but they're not going on the heroin's kick. They have neither the resources or the ability to accumulate the resources to obtain heroin. Make that clear. When the normal adult drinker takes in alcohol, it's very rapidly eliminated at the rate of about one drink per hour. The body first converts the alcohol into something called, you know how to pronounce that? Acetaldehyde.
Yes.
What is it?
Acetaldehyde. Acetaldehyde, yeah.
Thank you. Acetaldehyde. The chemical is very toxic, and if it were to build up inside us, we would get violently sick and could die. But Mother Nature helps us get rid of the
acetaldehyde. Yeah, with an emphasis on the tal. Acetaldehyde.
Very quickly, she efficiently changes in a couple more times into carbon dioxide and water, which eliminates through the kidneys and lungs. That's what happens to normal drinker. It also happens with alcoholic drinkers, but with the alcoholic drinker, something additional happens. I knew it. As a drunk, I'm entitled to the bonus plan. What Virginia discovered in Houston has been extensively confirmed since in alcoholic drinkers, a very small amount of poisonous acetaldehyde is not eliminated. Instead, it goes to the brain. There, through a very complicated biochemical process, it winds up as THIQ. Research has found the following. One, THIQ is manufactured in the brain and only occurs in the brain of the alcoholic drinker. It is not manufactured in the brains of normal social drinkers of alcohol. Wow. THIQ has been found to be highly addictive. It was tried in experimental use with animals during the Second World War when we were looking for a painkiller less addicting than morphine. THIQ was a pretty good painkiller, but it couldn't be used on humans. It turned out to be much more addicting than morphine. Experiments have shown that certain kinds of rats cannot be made to drink alcohol. I have seen some of those Al-Anon rats pour out a perfectly good bottle of booze just to get cheesy with me. Put in a cage with a very weak solution of vodka and water, these rats refuse to touch it. They will literally thirst to death before they agree to drink alcohol. However, if you take the same kind of rat and put a minute quantity of THIQ into the rat's brain, one quick injection, the animal will immediately develop a preference for alcohol over water. Mostly Smirnoffs. I haven't said that word in a long time. Studies done with monkeys or close animal relatives in medical terms show the following. Well, the monkey might be off my back, but the circus is still in town. A, once the THIQ is injected into a monkey's brain, it stays there. You can keep the monkey dry, off alcohol. You ready for this, Harold? 7 years. Brain studies show that the THIQ remains in place in the brain. If I only had a brain. If you remember, some people get a little squirrely around between 5 and 7 years. Harold?
Yes, absolutely. This is so fantastic. What an exciting time it is to be alive. Not only this brain research on THIQ, but there are brain scans about all kinds of cross addictions, not to be confused with the church at all, but people who quit drinking sometimes take up smoking pot, or sometimes they quit drinking and they become sex addicts, or they turn to the internet and view lots and lots of porn, or they will get off of pain pills. And a lot of people who've been taking too many pain pills begin to feel like their life has been destroyed, their life is over, all meaning is gone, and they commit suicide. Pain pills are one of the most terrible addictions because it does brain damage. The little pumps in the brain shut off. And so the people cannot, even months and months after they've quit the pills, they still feel this tremendous blah feeling. It's called PAWS, post-acute withdrawal syndrome. But that's the reason.
Say that again, you broke up.
Oh, did I?
The
fact that the brain shuts off its little pumps when we take too many pain pills, that syndrome is called PAWS, post-acute withdrawal syndrome. And it's this blah feeling. We can view a beautiful sunset or go for a walk in the park or play with our kids and get no pleasure whatsoever out of it, called post-acute withdrawal syndrome. And people that are experiencing that gradually get the impression that they've ruined their lives and they might as well kill themselves. So I think that's one of the big reasons that suicide is up in our society, including suicide among teens. So we have it's a catastrophe, and we need to strengthen our families and our marriages so that we can protect our kids better. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. The alcoholic's body is like normal drinkers. Changes the alcohol into the acetaldehyde, and then changes most of it into carbon dioxide and water, which is in the end kicks out through the kidneys and lungs. However, the alcoholic's body won't kick all of these chemicals out. The alcoholic's brain holds a few bits back and transforms them into THIQ. As THIQ is accumulated in the brain of an alcoholic, at some point, maybe sooner, maybe later, the alcohol will cross over a shadowy line into a whole new way of living. Warning, once you're a pickle, there's no going back to being a cucumber. It is not known by medical science at this time where the line is or how much THQ an individual brain will pile up before one crosses this line. Some predisposed people cross the line while they're teenagers or earlier. Others cross the line in the 30s or 40s, and others after retirement. But once this happens, the alcoholic will be as hooked on alcohol as he would have been hooked on heroin if he'd been shooting that instead. Wow. Like that, Harold?
Yes, it's very important. There's been a lot of new research on addiction and people in big trouble. What they have found, and I don't know whether you know this or maybe our listeners, there are more deaths from alcohol overdose than all the other drug overdoses combined.
Mm.
Alcohol is so dangerous. So the fact that the body turns some of it into THIQ is a partial explanation for what's going on. It is very dangerous, and we never know when we've crossed that line. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. It's different for everybody. some people are born genetically predisposed, I believe. She doesn't really relate that, and it's really not part of this discussion. But my personal experience is some folks are born with propensity to alcoholism. They have a recessive gene or something, DNA, something. They really haven't put their finger on it, but it just is, you know, the American Indian culture is one, the Irish, if you know any, you know, not all of them are drunks, but a preponderance of numbers. And it seems to go down from generation to generation. We hear it in the rooms all the time. My father was a drunk. My grandfather was a drunk. My grandmother was a drunk. It was sort of like an inheritance. You know, for the kid was 6 years old when he took his first sniff of alcohol, and he knew he found the elixir of the gods. You know, he just knew it. He knew from the first drink of alcohol, no matter how young he was, he'll never forget that first drink, how it made him feel and how he craved the next one. And no matter what the consequences were, his next thought was, when could he get some more? That's all he knew. He could talk to girls. He was bulletproof. He could dance. You know, there's a Jewish saying, you dance better and you're better looking when you have money in your pocket. This is like putting money in your pocket. You know, you were somebody special. You were somebody. And that's what alcohol does for most of us. So, but then, on the other hand, you have, I like to think of it this way. There was a movie called, I think, The Professionals. Lee Marvin was in there, and Claudia Cardinale, and Ralph Bellamy, that's going back. Most of you won't remember the name. He's dead now, an old-time actor, good actor. And he was an old man that wanted the young woman, Claudia Cardinale, and Lee Marvin got the girl back, and they realized that she didn't want to be there, and they were just acting as henchmen. And back then, they were, you know, gentlemen gangsters, or they were professionals. They considered their business as a profession, and they only they lived at a higher standard. And he turned around to he was taking the girl back to where she where they found her, and to get him away from this old man that wanted designs on this young woman. And Ralph Bellamy turns around to him and said, you're a bastard. And Lee Marvin pauses in his saddle, and he looks down, and he goes, sir, he says, for me, it was an accident of birth, but for you, sir, are a self-made man. And it's a good line. That was my experience. I drank hard enough and long enough to get the craving. One day, and no telling when it happened, but I needed to drink. That's what I thought was when I had my last drink, and when was I going to drink again? That was my main. And then, of course, saying that I'm an alcoholic about 2,000 times, my subconscious has bought the idea. Here I am. So there's two kinds. There's the one with the who have drank enough to become an alcoholic, and then those who have a genetic propensity. You agree with that, Harold?
Yes, I meet a lot of people in my work, and many people are trying to figure out whether or not they have a drinking problem. I really don't use the word alcoholic hardly at all anymore with talking to other people. I describe myself that way when I'm at AA. But a word that's much more useful, I think, in figuring out if you have a drinking problem or if you should do something about it, is the word dependent. I was alcohol dependent. And in your example a few minutes ago, you mentioned that there was alcohol there. And some people think they need alcohol before they can talk to the opposite sex. Their social skills are dependent on alcohol. And my father-in-law needed a double scotch, just one of them, every night at 5 o'clock to unwind from work. He was dependent on alcohol to relax. And so that's a useful word. Anything we're dependent on, we're a slave to. And then the body has the amazing ability to adapt I mean, alcohol is race car fuel, let's face it. And it burns. And you can feel it. It burns as it goes down. So the body begins to adapt to you putting that poison in there every day. And after a while, the body will have tremors if you don't put that alcohol in there. And that's a dangerous sign that, indeed, the person has become dependent. The body then says, hey, I need this, and I need more of it, and I need it more often. And so you can't quit, and you can't continue, because the body begins to fall apart. So all this comes together. Everyone has a different pattern, it seems, but we can all agree that dependency is the thread that runs through all problem drinking, and drugs also. So I was listening to CNN last night, and Bill Clinton was on, willing to talk about his experience with his surgeries, after his surgeries, taking his pain medications, and he was describing taking, how careful he had to be taking those, so that when it was time, as the pain diminished, then the medication also had to diminish. But there's some new laws about pain meds and pain doctors around the United States. The state of Washington has passed a law that once your medications get to a certain quantity per day, you need a pain specialist to sign off on your doctor's prescription. And we don't have enough pain doctors in the country to take care of the demand. We don't have enough doctors in general because of Obamacare beginning now, and especially pain doctors. So it's quite a mess. People are having to wait a long time to get their pain meds that they're taking appropriately. And a lot of people will take other people's prescriptions. So they went through a list of things. You can probably find it on CNN.com of safeguards for how to take your pain meds safely and how to avoid becoming dependent. And very, very interesting conversation with Bill Clinton and the top doctors in the country. That's worth taking a look at. And some people switch from pain meds to alcohol. So very interesting stuff. But and I wanted to also mention the scientists who work with the electron microscopes think that they have actually seen the defective gene for addiction. They don't know how to fix it, but they can identify it and see that the addict has a different gene than people without addiction. So indeed it is genetic, and it runs in families, and it's quite complex. But if you think you have a drinking problem, just quit for 6 months, and that'll give you a lot of information. Wait a minute, let me back off for a second. If you drink heavily, do not suddenly quit, please. Because if you're drinking a quart a day, a pint a day, a six-pack of beer every day, there's a possibility that if you suddenly quit, you could have a seizure and die. Not many people know that. Some do. But I'm telling you, seriously, see your doctor, tell your doctor you'd like to quit. There are medications that will help you avoid a seizure and avoid a fatality. So keep that in mind if you're thinking about ending your addiction to alcohol. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. With the loss of control, the complex system have become chronic. All aspects of physiology has become progressive and incurable. Now it is clearly a disease. Good news, I'm not weak person trying to get strong. I'm not bad person trying to get good. I'm a sick person trying to get well. Alcoholism is a disease. Alcoholism is not the alcoholic's fault. Alcoholics can get proper treatment for the disease, which begins with telling them these facts. The alcohol can be relieved of guilt. The alcoholic can take on responsibility for arresting the disease. The alcoholic can refuse to put more THQ in their brains and refuse to activate the THQ that is already there. Alcoholics can and do recover if they have the capacity to be honest and are willing to clean up the wreckage of their past and expand their spiritual life. He who conceals his disease cannot expect to be cured. It's an Ethiopian proverb. The disease with which the human mind now labors is want of faith. Ralph Waldo Emerson. For more information on this, I left some links on the website. THQ, the biochemical culprit, technical document regarding THQ, pharmacology and biology, truth, costs. Don't facts how we should I care. Why should I care? How and why should I care? Laws, numbers, THIQ. Life, you can give your children your stories, what you can lose, Thursday, July. And so there's that information. There's a phone number. I don't know if it's still good. I have never called. Location. And so this, I like to, something like this, I believe it's important to get a certain amount of documentation and credibility. This goes against the forces sometimes. I know some of the folks in my church, they don't, most people who are not familiar with the addictive personality, one, or the alcoholic, two, will dismiss most addiction as being weak-willed. They always have, they always will. No will. He's such a nice guy. Why can't he just stop? Can he just drink or have a couple drinks and like everybody else? You know, she was such a nice girl. I don't know why. You know, can't she just stop? People really take that on. You know, they some have the love of Jesus, and I'm okay with that if that's what gets you. We found that early on, some people had spiritual psychic experiences, and that was able to keep them off alcohol. We only know a little. More shall be disclosed to both you and to us. Some people go on the religious route. And Harold goes, what do you go? It's what do you call your group?
Celebrate Recovery.
Celebrate Recovery. It's Jesus Christ and Heavenly Father is the higher power, and it's based on the big book along with spiritual concepts that derive the alcoholic, and it works for a lot of people. Now, if that works for you, that's great. You know, no problem. AA is a little bit more open-minded. The problem with AA, and I wrote the post on that, it was a tongue-in-cheek, but there's a lot of good truths in there. AA threatens to fire God, demands more benefits and less participation. So it seems that there's a general lay of the land of and Clancy I, one of the icons in AA, had made that statement that he saw in some of the groups, and he goes to a lot. He's probably one of the most well-known, if not the well-known, circuit speaker today in AA. And he goes around to a lot of different places. He carries the message far and wide, goes to meetings in different areas, and he has observed of AA elbowing God out of the rooms. Now, normally, that would have been the case. AA was a beacon of hope and service and good works, but I don't believe that this is just germane to AA. I see this as a common failing of our society today, elbowing God out of our consciousness. People are uncomfortable with God. Too many demands, not enough benefits. Harold, any last words?
Yes, that's true. And at first I couldn't really appreciate the Bible and Jesus Christ and absolute truth, but giving it a fair chance and reading it for myself, letting it come alive, I really, now at this point, it's really feeding me. And I'm thankful to AA that AA was there and accepted me and helped with my recovery for years and years while I came to the point where I could read the Bible. So it's a progress, it's a pathway, and I'm really grateful to God for the whole thing, AA and Celebrate Recovery, both. So, well, I need to sign off now.
Well,
thanks,
this is
Joseph.
It. You welcome, Harold. I would end with this. It's progress, spiritual progress, not perfection. Nobody gets out of here perfect. So we do the best we can, and which one day at a time. Rum Radio is in 147 foreign countries, including Mississippi, over 2,600 towns, cities, and villages. And we just went over 192,000 hits to the website. So we're quickly approaching the 200,000 mark in a little over 3 years, which I think is really good work. We stay anonymous, and there's no money being made. So if you're looking for some sponsorship information, some good, solid AA, I had a big book thumper in my home group the other day. He finally got around to it, and he said, you know, he says, I'm really impressed with it. He says, you stay on point, and it's all big book and 12 and 12. And I said, of course, that's all we need. So we'll see you on the radio. Thanks, Harold. Good night.
You're welcome. Good night.